if you're always trying to do the right thing, you'll never be wrong. Have purpose in what you're doing, man. Like, don't get me wrong, you're going to get in trouble sometimes for doing the right thing. Sometimes you're going to be unpopular for doing the right thing, but the right thing is the right thing all the damn time.
Firehouse Vigilance presents the Weekly Scrap, a podcast dedicated to the never-ending fight against complacency.
Corley Moore, Firehouse Vigilance, Weekly Scrap, number 115. My very special guest tonight is Justin Fraze. He is a 22-year veteran of the fire service, is currently apparatus operator at the Colony Fire Department. He is an adjunct instructor for the, and I had to work on this, North Central Texas College Fire Academy. That's a mouthful. And so, is that the Mean Green? Is that North Texas College? Is that the whole deal?
No, that's, you know, that's
different one.
University of North Texas is the...
Okay. I always pass it there on I-35. But anyway, yeah. You can find him teaching all over the country, various conferences. I've had the pleasure of being around him at a few. You can find him making some noise wherever there is a hot track or live fire taking place. He has the certs. He is an active member of the Fools, and he is a Georgia Smoke diver. I am excited for this evening's conversation. So, my brother, Justin Fraze, welcome to Scrap number 115.
Man, dude, thank you so much for having me. I am honored to be here, man. This is really cool. Thank you.
It's going
to
be fun. Anything I missed? Oh, anything, yeah. Anything you want to add?
No, man, that's pretty much it in a nutshell.
I heard
you went out and found a guy who was really loud, and let's put him on a podcast. Let's get it.
That's a secret to the scrap. I'm silencing my phone here. There we go. I heard we qualified for a rock star. That's the part where...
Oh, yeah. Okay. No, I actually have my son out for a rock star delivery right now because I didn't even realize what time it was. I was trying to get all psyched up and just lost track
ready
of time.
To go. Fair enough. Yeah, audience, get your questions ready. People are logging in. Let me see what we got. Here we go. Yeah, we've already got comments. I'll catch you up in a second. audience, get your questions ready for Justin. If you find value in the scrap, this is a new thing I'm doing. If you find value in the scrap, go to firehousevigilance.com and support it. I do not ever want to sell ads for the scrap. So if you find value, support it, and you can go there and do so at firehousevigilance.com. So that's always my thing to open up. I'm going to catch you up. Robert Queen said, good evening to my brother, the Colony rock star. Eric Thiel said, let's do it. I'm getting some memes. There we go. What's up, brothers from Tyler Whitfield. Chief Thompson will be in Wisconsin this weekend. So there you go. You're clear. You're not going to get fired in any way, shape, or form.
Well, we'll do our best.
I'm just kidding. Robert Ridley says, I have heard this guy is a badass truckie from the Colony. That's coming from National Fire Radio. Justin, James McCallish says, Justin, you need to light up your face. And I said, like, there, you ought to see it. At one point, he actually went full on, like, witness protection.
That's probably program. Where I should be, like, because that way, you know, there's plausible deniability. If you can't actually see my face when the words come out of my mouth, I could deny that it was me.
David Mellon actually said it, and he's easy on the eyes. So there you go, man.
That's one of my man crushes there.
And this is something we just talked about because David Hinojosa says, don't forget the knife hands.
So, oh, yeah, they will. We literally just talked about Hinojosa like 5 minutes ago. Yes. Like, it, well, hell, 3 minutes ago. It was good.
It was in the pregame. We discussed knife hands and David Hinojosa. And Devin Craig said, shotgun that rock star. So there you go. Man, dude, whiskey in hand, ready to take notes from Michael.
Rockstar is on the way. I did not have one. It is in or out, but we'll work on this little gray cup here for now.
Justin Fraze, hope you're doing well, bro. Look forward to hearing you talk shop. That comes from BJ Breacher. And there we go. Hot Fools, the final one, says our man, Justin Fraze. So there we go. Hype all done. Right. Hype done. Intro done. Closing out stuff, pulling up my notes. There we go. I want to start. First question. Audience, get your questions ready. But starting out, first time I got to be around you was when you came up and taught hands-on training at the Honor the Fallen, man, earlier this year. Awesome time. But you were teaching forcible entry, but my man, you have a motivational style about you. And since then, I've seen it multiple times. But talk to me about where that comes from and kind of just you.
Man, I don't know where it came from. It's, like, I'm just passionate about this stuff. Man, I love what I do. And I want other guys to, like, who, you know, Robert Ramirez, you can't fake passion. I mean, I'm a quote, like, you've had all of my friends on the scrap, and the ones that haven't been on here yet are going to be on here soon. But I just love what I do, man. And it, you can, there are people that have that where they, that passion just like it carries on to you. You're just around those people and you feed off of those people. And I want to be one of those guys. I'm still working on that, but I just want guys to get fired up, dude. I don't mind like yelling, cheering you on, and just trying to give you a piece of me. Like when you're there, man, I want them to get their money's worth.
Yes. So what do you think it is that allows you to be so vocal? I'm trying to phrase it the right way, but like phrase, there's a turn of,
yeah.
But anyway, we're going to have all these all night.
We're here all night. I'm just me. I just want to be, I'm real, dude. My flaws are out there. I'm honest about my F ups. I'm just a dude, man. And I don't mind telling you, hey, I have screwed this up. Here's where I got this from, because I have failed or messed this up so many times. I'm not any better than you. I'm just a dude that has effed it up more times than you have.
Yes. And that leads right in. Devin Craig said, Justin Fraze is best described as a teddy bear on too much caffeine. And he said, is that his tour color? Watson Kohonke said, you are blue. You're doing a great Smurf impression. Is that your tour color? Okay. This is my main crush coming from Trey Stout. Dude, two things I've already noticed just from talking to you, briefly pre-show. I mean, not to mention the times we've met and talked but you humility. Like, you let it off with one of the things I always ask people about questions they want to talk about. Excuse me. And you said, I have failed a lot, and I don't mind sharing if that helps someone else.
I never want to be that guy. You meet those instructors and they come off, they put their own selves on a pedestal, and I'm not that guy. I just want people to know I'm just a super real dude that screws up a lot. I'm going to continue to screw up. And the more times I screw up, hopefully I get better at it. And if I can, put something that I have failed out there for someone, hey man, here's how I screwed this up, here's why I screwed this up, and save them from dealing with the heartache or failure that I dealt with, man, then I'm doing the right thing.
Right on. Now, you are vocal. That's one of the things that I really notice. You'll sit down on those knees, bunker pack, air pack on, and say, hey guys, come here, get in here, we just went over this right over here, and then you start preaching, and it's awesome on the hot ground. And I'm trying to phrase the question correctly in the fact of, what have you learned that works and connects? What have you learned that falls flat? Or is it strictly organic and reading the room or the track, for lack of a better term?
I think that's a lot of it's just reading the room, man, because there's places where that's appropriate, then there's places that it's not. But for whatever reason, man, I don't know what it is. I'm just... people will listen to me. I guess it's just because I'm loud. They have no choice. Like, I'll drown everything else out. I just got a big barrel chest and it carries. My wife can probably hear me in the living room right now. But it really is just passion, man. That's just when it comes out of me. And I want people to be good at this shit, man. I don't care if you're a volunteer, professional, black, white, male, woman, Martian. I don't give a crap. I just want you to be good at this shit. People count on us to be good on this. To be good at what we do, and I just want everybody to be the best that they can.
Brian Abbott said, how long should Mrs. Smith wait for rescue? My favorite phrase moment.
Mrs. Smith shouldn't have to wait. We need to bunk out quickly, get there efficiently, mask up, get in, get Mrs. Smith out, and then move on with our lives. I mean, it's zero time. We should be parked in Mrs. Smith's house if we could.
Hugh Long says, he never yells, he just speaks with a lot of passion.
Yeah, there's no yelling.
No yelling.
No yelling, zero yelling.
I'm just checking. I'm checking to see if there's any questions coming in. I'm trying to get amateurs practice until they get it right, professionals practice until they can't get it wrong. Patrick Sawyer says, that means being okay with screwing up and moving forward 100%. Yeah. Looking for questions, guys. Every day I would come in, I get there an hour early shift. Justin already has his morning workout in. I never remember him missing one. Oh, I missed it. Oh, there we go. He is a hard charger. Messing up makes you better for next time. There we go. I'm just catching up, guys. Just catching up. There's a lot of comments coming at you, so I'd make sure I'm not missing one. So, working out, man. How important is it to you, and how important is it that you get it in early?
Well, that's just part of I don't even know when I started it, but it kind of sets the tone for my day. I get there. I'm usually there a little after 5. Our shift changes at 7. Stuff's on the rig and my angry music out there in the bay, and I do some kind of a circuit, usually on air, just trying to get something in. But you know, we don't have control, you know, on the fire ground. We can't control the conditions prior to us getting there. There's a lot of stuff that we have no control over, but your mental, physical, mechanical, procedural preparation, that's what Chief Thompson kind of talks about. Those are the things that we have absolute control over. So that's just part of my, you know, it's almost a religious thing at this point. I do it every morning when I get to work.
Love it. I got first one coming in. It's Devin Craig, your fellow GSD. He's coming.
Oh, yeah.
He said, if I can find it again, because I kind of scroll. The story, and every time I scroll to it, it goes away. The story of how, I'm going to read it the way Devin wrote it, okay?
Good luck with that.
The story of how get to where he is at the colony.
Oh, sorry. I worked for a couple different fire departments. So, started out in the small department, you know, in the area. It's a great place to start. It was just super slow. I wanted to, you know, 20 something years old and wanted to burn the world down. Went to another fire department that, the culture there was just kind of not great at the time. It's a great fire department now, but at the time it was just not struggling. A cool place to work. Kind of had a spot in between, on my way to work, but I would pull over and kind of vomit on my way to work because it was pretty bad. From there, went to a larger fire department that I really enjoyed a lot. I was made driver there. About to begin the captain's process there, and made a mistake there, and was asked to seek employment elsewhere. Offered the opportunity to resign, man. And so my career kind of got reset about a decade into this thing. Essentially, you know, for you know, hazing, for lack of a better term, the crew that I worked with at the time, we were on a dive team there. It wasn't a, you know, our mornings were, you know, hello, Michael, how was your weekend? It was something about F your mom. And it was basically like 5 of B. There was just a lot of personality there. And we had a new guy come down there. He didn't know how to take me, didn't know how to take us. I was an acting officer. And, you know, this guy, you know, he had a problem with us and filed a complaint, and it came down. And I owned every bit of it as much as I can. And the chief of the time didn't feel like he could live with that. And, you know, afforded me the opportunity to resign. So 10 years into my career, 12 years into my career, you know, I got a reset. And, you know, on my way home, I tell my wife I did not have a job anymore. I picked up a job application between that department and my house.
Wow.
And that's actually the place I wound up going to work for. It was kind of next door. And there were some people that knew my character, not just, hey, this is what, you know, this is the incident, Justin, you know, what he was involved with, but owned it. And, you know, got a second chance. I had somebody tell me that I wasn't, you know, I couldn't do this anymore, man. And I think it was 87 days between fire departments.
Nice.
But when I got there, I was 12 years in the fire service. I was still a basic level firefighter. I had very little education. And I had really just kind of floated through the first part of my career. I was complacent. I was in a comfortable spot.
Sure.
And I realized real quick once I got there, you know, hey, man, you kind of screwed up the first. I was a good employee, man. I hit all the check boxes, but I wasn't mentoring people. I wasn't leading. I was just, you know, I was just kind of there. And that was a big wake up call for me. And from there, I enrolled in college, got a hold of every class I could get into. I went from a basic level firefighter to my master firefighter,
nice,
master instructor, started teaching at the fire academy. One of my mentors that kind of raised me on the truck crew at this other department, John Copeland, hired me at NCTC to come in and become an instructor there. And that was kind of like the penance that I kind of paid for myself. Hey, if I screwed this up with a new guy, so here I am getting a hold of these guys as their fire academy recruits, and I'm gonna do the second half of my career infinitely better than I did the first. Had the opportunity to go work in the colony for Chief Thompson. Chief Thompson's kind of been around around me my entire career, taught my fire academy.
Was the
training chief of this at another department. So I've known him for a long time, and just loved what he was doing in the colony. And that's how I wound up there. Got the opportunity to go to the Georgia Smoke Diver program with a couple other guys from the colony. Was unsuccessful my first time, and trained up, went back and did it again. And all the best things that I've done in the fire service have been on the other side of, the first half of my career. So I'm trying to do it better the second go around. So that's where some of that passion that comes out of me when I'm teaching, I think that's where a lot of it comes from.
Just being on the other side and
oh yeah,
that perspective.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, and there's a lot of, there's power in that as well. I didn't die, wasn't a fireman. Right. Still managed to feed my family, still managed, to land on my feet on the other side. I could have, literally on my way home to tell my wife, hey, I don't have a job. I stopped and picked up an application because I knew that I'm not done. This is all I want to do. I'm not good at anything else. So let's dig in and push harder and do it better the second time.
Love it, man. Love it. And you kind of segue into my next question. If I can pull up my notes, I want to talk about Georgia Smoke Diving and the program and what it takes to take on that challenge. Not just once, but twice. So go ahead.
So the program, everybody kind of gets hung up on the whole PT part of it. The PT part of it, it's really a small part, but it's 95% of that class. It's mental, dude. It's psychological warfare. So we kind of talk about there's three categories of guys that are successful in that program. They're either just so young and so fit that they don't realize that their life sucks that week. the real heroes are your 28, 29-year-old guys, 36, 37. And those guys are just making a minute-by-minute decision to win, man. They're just in it. Those guys are grinding it out. And then you have the old guys, so 38 and up, and you're just kind of an asshole. You've just been through some stuff in your life, and you've persevered through it, and they can't kill you, man. And so you just get up there and you grind it out, and that's what it takes. The skills there, they're basic skills. They're just, you're expected to perform at a high level under fatigue and under stress.
Love it.
So just come in with your head screwed on right, and you're going to be okay.
All right, people. Justin, not Justin with a Y, Justin with an I, Lorenzen from OKC. He just posted a question I wanted to ask, and it scrolled away. Sometimes I hate Facebook and the fact that they only let me say, okay, here we go. Have Justin explain why he and their cadre yells, pressures their students during drills like they did at Honor the Fallen Conference hot classes.
So we can't duplicate fire ground stress. We're not coming off of a rig. We're not, Mr. Smith's not in the front yard with all the worst parts of the Bible going down. It's super easy to run that drill. We'll do training at the department where we call them our first 5-minute drills. And we do them off, and we come off and we kind of simulate, actual fire ground, what we're doing. But a lot of times, in other trainings, we'll just do these super simple drills, but you're not doing them under any stress. So I'll explain to them, hey, we're going to do forcible entry. We're going to go into the search drill, and I'm going to lean into you a little bit. And I just talk trash. I'm just over there talking trash to him. You can't do it fast enough. You can't do it good enough. Oh, take your time. We're getting paid by the hour. But you'll see real quick, as soon as you start putting some pressure on people that have never really felt that pressure before, they start fumbling around a little bit. And that's why we do that. I want these guys to understand, I don't care if all the, it's the whole book of Revelations is going down in that front yard. You need to be focused on the job that you need to do. You need to be able to mentally, push that stuff out of your head. Hey, this is my job. This is what I have to get done. And then, we can deal with all that other stuff later. And it's just that being able to be focused on the task and not get distracted.
Dude, I love that. I love that book of Revelation stuff too.
Oh, yeah.
Reference. Reminds me of Ghostbusters. Dogs and cats sleeping together.
Living together. Mass hysteria.
It's true. Okay.
It's all true.
There's good questions coming now. Daniel Kano, one of the Kano brothers, says, what is one of the best lessons you've learned from slash taken away from any of your mistakes?
Humility, being humble, man. It's, dude, I get humbled. I tell people all the time, man, there are two kinds of people. I've read it, said it, whatever. Two kinds of people, those that are humble and those that are about to be.
Yes.
And it's, you know, people, I have this perception that I'm just grumpy all the time. Sometimes it's just easier to, like, I'm super hard on myself because I really don't want myself to get comfortable. I don't want to get complacent. I got complacent the other day, made a mistake, and got smoked for it pretty hard at work. So it still happens. I'm still screwing stuff up. But that's the biggest thing is humility, man. I'm never going to be the best. I'm never going to be the biggest, fastest, strongest, any of that other stuff. I'm just going to grind. And past that is, I don't want to be the, I still want to be the best, but I want other people to be better than me. Like, I want to be good, but I want other people to be better than me. I expect the fire service to push past me and leave me behind at some point in time.
Love it, man. David Pruitt said, talk about the value you are finding in being able to have a dedicated assignment, truck/engine and squad at where you currently work.
So Chief Thompson talked about it a little bit in his book, but that the kind of like that art of specialization, you don't have a pitcher, baseball pitcher playing wide receiver in the NFL. It gives us an opportunity to specialize. Man, my brain just wraps around truck stuff. Like, if it's all about smashing and breaking things, I'm 1,000% in. I want to be in there, searching around and just buried up, going from room to room, running a search. I love that. Everything about truck work appeals to me. And there are guys that are all about doing, water nerd stuff. I mean, if you want to be a water nerd, that's cool. whatever, man.
I love it.
Yeah. But no, man, we have some great engine guys, and that's one of the things I love about being in the colony is that we get to specialize in that. I know what I'm doing that day. The guys that are assigned to that apparatus know what they're doing that day, and we have an opportunity to excel at it.
Dude, yeah, I just lost, like, guys, it's not my fault. Facebook only allows like 100 comments to stay, and then they go away. So if you had a good question, if I put a heart on it, put your question back in here. I will find it again. David Hinojosa asks, have you ever been injured and how did it affect you mentally?
I'm 2 back surgeries and knee surgery in the hole. I've got a separated shoulder and a torn labrum. So, I've been injured. I just come back and keep doing stupid stuff. Like, I don't, I got raised in the fire service. Like I said, just the 2 smaller departments that I worked at initially, man, like, a bunch of good dudes, but they were really, really young, man. And, I come from a family with a really good work ethic. My dad worked hard. My mom worked hard. And I went to a department that actually had a real strong truck culture. And these guys on this truck, they were larger than life. Just some of the toughest dudes I've ever met in my life. And I'm like, man, those are the guys that I want to be like. Again, John Copeland, one of my mentors growing up, I still teach with him at the college. Just effing tough, man. And so that's just what I wanted to be, if I get injured, it happened, man. That sucks for me. Take some ibuprofen and, maybe have a surgery or two, then I'm going to come back to work and it's going to be fine.
It's basically rub some dirt on it.
That's pretty much it, man.
Robert Ridley asks, I think ownership of our mistakes or missteps is huge. How did you frame that conversation and utilize it as a strength to move forward from resigning and essentially bouncing back?
It's funny. I'm really good friends with one of the chiefs that hired me at that next department. And that was a conversation that him and I had after I didn't know him at all before that interview. But they literally said, if he comes in here and owns this, we'll hire him. That was kind of how it was going to go. And like, I had no choice. I mean, I effed up royally. What else was I going to say? I couldn't pass, punt it to anybody else. There's nobody else to blame. That was squarely on me. That whole, grew up, hardworking parents, and hey, if you tell me the truth, you're going to be better off if you lie to me. So from an early age, I'm like, well, lying to me is, you know, lying to them is not going to work out well right. for me. So that just have a kind of how I came up. And if you own it, you are forced to deal with it. Like, you have to, hey, man, I effed this up. What can I do to fix this? And people are going to be more apt to listen to you or give you another chance if you just, you know, come right out and say, hey, I screwed this up. Here's how I screwed it up. Here's what I learned from it. Here's what will never happen again. And here's how I'm going to push forward with it.
Love it. Someone asked, and I'm sorry, they're scrolling by so fast. But someone did ask, what are the requirements for Georgia Smoke Divers?
So the in-state, they actually have it's a competitive process for in-state to get in. And it's all on their website. For out-of-state, they have if you go to either a Georgia Smoke Diver program or so Georgia, Oklahoma, or Indiana, they're all sister programs. You can click on a little button there that says become a smoke diver. It has a little information page. You'll fill in your information there, and they'll send you an email when they're getting ready to take applicants again. The requirements really just, you know, work for a fire department, be able to pass the physical test, but there's a written test as well. And then you're good to go. I believe they used to have a requirement to have like 3 or 4 years on the fire service, but we had a couple guys from Edmond that came through with one of my classes. I think they had less than a year in, man. And those guys, they crushed it, man. They did awesome.
I like it. Okay. BJ Breacher's coming at you. He said, Justin, similar to you, I'm spirited. He put it in a single quotation.
Spirited. Yes.
In my teaching style and the fire service in general, more than once people have approached my superiors and have complained about my enthusiasm in what we do. How do you address
that? Never happens.
How do you address that, especially when your students fall short of the bar you set?
Man, so again, that never happens. So I think, first of all, you actually have to have some buy-in from those superiors. You know, hopefully they know your person. I mean, they know you, they know your character, they know what you're about. And they've seen results. Like, if you've been teaching for a while and you have candidates that have come through, and you know, you're putting quality people in place, or, you know, what they're finding value in what it is that you're teaching, then you're more apt to be able to get away with, you know, with the spirited teaching. I've had superiors field complaints from me. I've backed off on the Facebook debate program a little bit. Some people are just real quick to give your fire chief a call, and I've got to call him. Hey, boss, are we okay? Yeah, man, we're okay. I'm like, all right, cool. Roger that. We'll keep moving on. Having a little bit of support from those guys and your superiors, or those guys knowing that what you're doing, you know, has purpose. You're not just screaming and yelling to be an a-hole. There's some kind of method behind the madness to what you're doing.
Love it. Patrick Sawyer said, give us the 5 things you want to see when you first put your gear on the rig. Starting the day right means less prep when you need it. Thoughts?
5 things when I'm putting my gear
demanding.
On.
He wants 5.
That is super demanding. 5. So much pressure.
Sometimes you get soft balls, and sometimes they're coming.
That was he's sniping at me right now, bro. I guess one, my first thing is an air pack check. So we have the MSA. We've got a tag in our air pack. So air pack is going to go on my back. I don't just check it off in the seat. It goes on my back, and I'm going to do a full air pack check every time. So that's really kind of 1 through 4 right there. If we're being honest, past that, you know, I'm going to put all of my gear on every shift. All of my gear goes all the way on. So I make sure that it's all where it's supposed to be. Everything's in my pocket where it's supposed to be. My gloves are hanging where they're supposed to be. It's all there. Next is my tools. Wherever I'm riding at that day kind of dictates what I'm carrying and where I'm carrying it. So I'm making sure all that's in place. Once that's done, then it's, you know, angry music time, and we're slinging weights around in the bay or outside. So I'm going to take credit for 3 on the air pack, because there was really kind of 3 specific things.
I like it.
On the air pack, there's air in it. I'm checked into it, and I do a full function check. And
putting the gear on, dude, that's huge. I don't know. Yeah. That's huge, man. That's just actually slinging your air pack on in your gear. I mean, holy crap. Everybody does. Yeah. Okay. Tim Wilder. Justin, thank you. Thank you, brother, from Tim Wilder. Sorry, Justin. There's another Justin, but only one with a Y in their name, though. So
thanks, Dad. Appreciate it.
So what's the best advice to give somebody who is brand new to this profession? I work for Greensboro Fire Department here in North Carolina. That's from Tim Wilder. Best advice to give somebody who is brand new to the profession?
Find a mentor, man. Mm. So early on in my career, I worked for a really young department. They're super good dudes. We partied like rock stars. Like we had a super good time, man. But I didn't know, what I could be in the fire service. I'm like, hey, man, I was just happy to be there. But find somebody, find a mentor, find somebody that's good at this shit. And grab on those guys, that guy's coattails, and learn as much as you can, man. Be super humble, head down, outwork everybody. If you're a brand new guy. So there was a guy that retired from this department that I started at. It was the new guy speech, tea, towels, toilets, telephones. Oh, those wow. all belong
yeah.
to you. Outwork everybody. You have two ears and one mouth for a reason. Listen twice as much as you talk. Ask good questions. Don't be afraid to ask questions. Be honest, man. If somebody asks you, hey, do you understand this? Like, tell them, hey, I don't understand this. Because it's better to be dumb for 2 seconds than it is for your entire career. Hey,
or on that next call.
Oh, yeah. I don't understand this now, but if I lie about it, I'm not going to understand it for the next 20 years. So be honest. Know your capabilities and your limitations, man, and learn as much as you can.
Dude, right there, if you get nothing else out of this scrap than that little 30-second bit, then you're ahead of the game. Jordan Thomas said, ask him about a story of heading to a class with Sandy and some other dudes and rolling up on a pin job.
So yeah, we were at the Bears of the Oath number two, man, and we'd got a phone call. There's a wreck on the highway. Hey guys, for the instructors, hey, find a back way in. And so Timothy Sandoval, Sandy O'Malley, is rolling with me in the car, and so he's navigating. He actually kind of got us lost a little bit, and we're come around a corner, and Todd Shepard is running back to his truck, and there's a engine that was rolled over. And I look over at Sandy, I'm like, hey, dude, like, they go hard in the paint on training, man. Is this real? Like,
right? We
didn't know, like this, there was fire engine stuff everywhere, and we get out, and Todd's like, hey, man, he's in there. I'm like, oh crap! And we roll up, and this guy was in there by himself. He was actually on his way to that wreck that was on the highway, and rolled this engine over. We picked up a three-piece Haugen. Before I got the three, that's the only acceptable use for a three-piece Haugen. This was the incident. Got to him, kind of got the seatbelt off of him. I was able to get the door open and kind of squat down, get his legs out, but he was still pinned in there. We started working on the door with a three-piece Haugen. We picked up off the ground. And then behind us happened to be Anthony, a bunch of the NRC guys, National Rescue Consultant guys. So we were there. It's just a bunch of straight up hood rats.
Just rock stars rolling up on this road engine.
And rescue and squad instructors all roll up behind us. We all start working on this thing. A couple of Scott Sanders rolls up. There was some smoke divers there that I knew. Like, I'm 1,000 miles from home, and there's dudes that I know here.
Right.
And I believe they said when the truck that pulled up with actual tools on it we could work on, that we used to work on this thing, I think it was 5 minutes that we had this dude out.
Wow.
But we wound up doing so we lifted with spreaders and a jaws on one side, and they had to do an airbag lift on the other side and coordinate this at the same time, because it was his head was kind of in the middle of that cab, and either way it rolled, it would push on him.
Sure.
And a bunch of guys that had never worked together ever. And we put this this pin job together and got this guy out, pretty quick. And I believe that he's recovered. So
that is an awesome story. Awesome.
We showed back up to the training field for this class. Hey, man, what happened? That's the first time I've ever pulled a fireman out of a fire engine. So I had jelly legs and everything after the fact. It was pretty cool.
Westbrook Tier chimed in and said, Sandy is one of my backstep guys and a hell of a squared away fireman.
So, Sandy's a rock star, man.
No doubt about it. How do you show the importance of culture and training to a new fireman who is new or never had it in past departments?
Man, so honestly, they're probably not going to get it right off the bat. Because if you have a good culture where you're at already, they won't know any different. That's a great thing, like to never know a toxic culture or a crappy culture. Hopefully you've got a mentor there like Jacob Johnson or somebody like that that's showing this guy, a great mentor, showing this dude the ropes and bringing him up the right way. And that dude, that new guy, unless he's, got family in the fire service or knows somebody, he's not going to know any different. So bring him up right from the beginning. I guess maybe you can tell horror stories of other terrible places, but hey man, right now this place is awesome and you're in it.
Love it. Jacob Johnson, which you just mentioned, said, explain your passion for God's work and what drives you to be good at it.
Oh, so for God's work, he's talking about truck work, not engine work, just so you know, just so the water nerds know, he's talking about truck work.
I would have asked the question if I'd understood. I'm going to be clear. Go ahead.
No, man. So truck work, we're just engine helpers. We're just glorified engine helpers, man. We're just helping the engine do their thing. But I don't know why. It was just something that I grabbed, like the biggest, angriest guys that I knew in the fire service, the guys that kind of raised me, they were all truck guys. I'm like, man, those guys are badass. I want to be those guys. I love search. Everything to do with truck work, forcible entry, search, ventilation. We can't do the purpose of the truck is null and void without, good engine work. I don't want to be in there searching. I listened to Kevin Lewis, his scrap here the other day, but I don't want to be in there searching without a good hose line. The guys in there, on the hose line, don't want to be in there with a hose line without a good team up top, opening the top for them. I want to get in there. I want to do the search. At the end of the day, like our job at the core is to get in there and save people from fire. I want to get in there, put my hands on it. It's a manual labor job. I tell people this, that, water might always win, but to the best of my knowledge, nobody has ever washed a victim out of a structure with a hose line. Not one time. So there's a truck guy in there or somebody in there doing a search to put their hands on them and drug them out. And that's just what I want to be part of.
I love it. I love that. And that's why you call it God's work.
That's God's work.
We need, engine guys need helpers. That's all I got to say.
Oh yeah, I know. I'm here for you, bro.
It's all good. All we have is Quint. So, someone asked, we got ladders with bladders. Masks over or under the hood?
I don't care. I don't care. Whatever gets it done faster. I've seen people pass fit tests with a mask on the top of the hood. Obviously we test under the hood. Whatever. If your department allows you to have your hood on and then put your mask on top of it, awesome. I've never really tried it in our department. We have a standard in the Colony, Texas. Our mask up time needs to be sub 30 seconds. My personal standard is, 12 seconds or less. That's nice. A working mask up time. So we do a mask up drill every morning. So we'll either force a door, throw a ladder, mask up. We do that every shift. So I don't give a crap how you get it done, man. Just get it done. Get in there, get it done quickly and get inside.
Love that. Love that. All right. Find a mentor in house on the street. One will teach within the department. The other will teach you within the fire service. That's Tony Nunez talking. James Denny said, mentors not only teach firemanship, but also life lessons when needed.
Absolutely.
Dude, that's super strong, bro. That's super strong.
Especially we get these young guys. Yeah, we're in the Colony, man. We don't get a lot of brand new guys. We get a lot of guys that, come from someplace else, man, but having a mentor for that young dude that's, just coming into the fire service, man, these guys don't know how to pay bills sometimes. I didn't know that you weren't supposed to put a cast iron skillet in the dishwasher. I didn't know that when I came to work at the fire service in 1999.
Dude, that's one of my stories when I totally took the season out of a cast iron skillet.
Oh, dude, I got smoked.
Oh, join the club.
So, man, like it's like paying bills. Hey, man, put as much money as you can into your retirement. Hey, man, like that chick, yeah, you need to get rid of her. She is no good, bro. It's not just the fire skills, man. It's helping those guys out with life.
Jacob Gorman, don't know if you know him or not.
Oh, yeah, we've met.
He said, dude is legit. I think he's talking about you. He said, dude is legit. If you think he's good at karaoke, watch him as a fireman. So that leads to the question of, which is might be the first time I've ever asked this on the scrap, but what's your go-to karaoke song, then?
Oh, man, Bust a Move. Young MC, right off the bat, always. It's just there. I've definitely got some country tunes in the back there, but that's my go-to.
Bust a move,
Young MC.
Best friend, yeah. Larry has a brother, Harry.
Oh yeah. Man,
okay.
In 5 weeks, that man's going to marry. Oh yeah.
Sorry, you got me laughing too much. Oh. You don't even have your rock star yet.
No, I don't know where my kid's at. I sent him, and maybe he's afraid to open the door because I might yell at him. Who knows? I don't know.
Colton Purcell has asked this question, so I want to throw it at you. Coming from a young firefighter, I've heard this quote by many and wanted your thoughts. Are we hiring the wrong people or lacking the right mentors?
So Colton Purcell, his dad, probably one of the straight-up biggest badasses I've ever met in the fire service, dude. His dad's nice. A phenomenal fireman. He retired here a while back. Are we hiring the wrong people or do we have the wrong mentors? Man, yes. I don't know, man.
That's a legit answer. I mean, it really is.
No, I mean, it really is. It's yes. It's both. There are guys that get into this, you know, for the wrong reasons, or there are guys that get in and they don't realize until it's too late that they, man, maybe don't belong here. Then you have guys that, you know, that, hey, great guy that we just hired, and we just gave this dude a terrible mentor. It could be a combination of both, one or the other. I'm hoping that, you know, your department or whoever you go to work has some kind of a screening process for who you pick as a mentor or who they select for to be your mentor. And I really hope that we're not hiring the wrong guys, man. We haven't, again, this is not a problem that I've really seen a whole lot of. Now we have guys that come in that just don't know.
Right.
They don't know what the expectation is. They don't, you know, maybe they don't know necessarily the ins and outs of the job, but maybe some of the physical and mental requirements. And if they came into this job and they don't, man, then whoever taught their fire academy sucked. I mean, they messed that dude up. They set him up for failure. But you know, I both of those things I think can be repaired. They can both be fixed. You know, you can hopefully you can correct a guy's attitude or show him the light, you know, show him what the right way is. If you've got a poor mentor and you know, hopefully that guy can either have a conversation with the guy, hey man, like I'm not getting a whole lot from you. Is there anybody else I can learn from? Or somebody recognize that this guy's, you know, not doing a good job mentoring, or you need to have a better screening process.
Wow. No, solid, man. All hell reps. He wants to know, if your department doesn't have the luxury of designated engine/truck companies, what are the top three truck skills that the companies that you do have should emphasize?
Search, ventilation, forcible entry. Search all day long. Everybody, I don't give a crap if you're on an engine or a truck. You need to know how to search at a base level, know how to search. Past that, ventilation, knowing how to do it when it's applicable. And then again, forcible entry should be a skill that everybody should have, because you know that if you're an engine guy and you're waiting for a truck guy to come force your door, and you're just standing there waiting on that dude, yeah, you're wrong.
Nice,
because things are going to get better as soon as you get in there, put water on that thing, and again, you're pushing a hose line to the fire, close to the fire where the victims are in the most amount of danger, and generally down their path of egress, which is another place that we're likely to find victims. So those are the three skills that I'd right off the bat.
Boom. Dude, again, There's so much. I hate to say it again, but if all you get is that last 30 seconds, it's worth it, man. It's worth listening to however long we prattled here. So that is solid, man. Everything on the fire ground should support the search. That's coming from Humpy, and yes. 100%, brother.
My boy Humpy.
Absolutely. Yeah, even Justin, the other Justin agrees. He said 100%. And we have another Justin. Justin Bowen said, how would you go about fixing a complacency culture without waiting for retirements? So now we're getting in deep, dude.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Man, I'm a driver, bro. we're asking chief level stuff here. Man, so it's hard to fix culture from the bottom up. Culture is generally, that's a top down, you know, repair, man. The best that you can do is try to, you know, that 6 foot circle of influence, man. I can affect these guys right here that I can put my hands on. You know, I can't really do anything about this other crew. I can't do anything about this other shift, but I can try to affect my crew right here, man. Mm-hmm. And if it's just me by myself, I'm out there doing mascot drills. I'm throwing ladders by myself. I'm out here working out by myself. And one dude walks by, hey man, what the hell are you doing? Man, I'm out here doing this workout. You want to join me? Oh, I don't know. Man, come on, man. It'll be fun. It's cool. And you get one guy. And then it's, you know, you and one dude. And then people walk, hey, man, what the hell are y'all doing? And I'm like, hey, man, come join us. This is awesome. Check this shit out. And that's really kind of how it happens from the bottom up. You know, you can affect what you can affect. And then you have to be okay with that. You know, I had the truck crew that I worked on a couple years ago, dude. Holy crap. It was the most fun I've had in my entire career. And we knew that wasn't going to last forever, man, but we worked out together. We trained together. We did all this stuff. Pretty much all of us promoted up and out and off of that crew. And now that same attitude that we had there has kind of spread out through the department. Again, we had a great culture to begin with, but now all these guys that we did this training with and we did all these things, they're spreading that through the department. That's really the best I can do from a bottom up culture change is affect who you can affect and hopefully they pass it on.
That's all you can do, man. Other than that, you're spinning your tires.
Yeah,
that's it. I mean, 100%. You're slinging mud and getting nothing done.
So I've failed with this in the past as well, man. So we'll kind of talk about the smoke diver thing a little bit, man. When
bring it,
these guys, and it's kind of like the kind of a little reputation the smoke diver program has when guys come back to the department is, dude, you're going to come back fired the F up. Like, and you want to just burn the world down and like you want to knife hand everybody right off the bat. And
everybody needs to go do this right now.
Everybody better smoke that raw. And you can't do that, man. And I'm guilty of it just like everybody else. And if you come back and you try to force feed any of this stuff to them, culture, lacking, you know, not being complacent, mask it up, all this stuff. If you try to force feed this, guys will reject it, dude. They don't. A, we're American. B, you're a goddamn firefighter. Nobody's going to tell us what to do.
Right.
Unless they're, you know, blessed to do so. So it's almost, it's some psychological warfare there, man. One of our senior guys, you know, likened it to feeding an infant, man. You don't take a big serving spoon and try to feed a baby with it, man. You got to give them that little bitty tiny spoon. You give them a little bite at the time until they, you know, they decide they like it and then they want more of it and you keep feeding it to them. And you do the same thing with that culture change from the bottom up or feeding these skills to people. You give them a little bit and it's almost it's an art in trying to get them to want more of it.
To grow into wanting and understanding the need for it.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Understanding why you want it and why they need it.
Yes, dude. And that's where you start with the baby spoon. And the and the blended up vegetables because
yes
yeah you try to feed the whole crown of broccoli just doesn't work
yeah smashed up yams in a serving spoon tastes like crap but for whatever reason that little bitty spoon they taste delicious.
I love it, man. All right, I'm gonna try and catch up because I've been listening too long.
I've been running in my mouth too.
Patrick
long.
Sawyer said, "I'd like you guys to." Not a question. I'm looking for questions. I'm going through. There's some good comments. Don't get me wrong. A lot of good comments. This is the part where I need a producer that tells me, hey, this one's a good one. But as it is, you got me. Nicholas Papa's new book for coordinating veterans is a must read. Yes, Jordan Thomas said that. If you have not read it, it is an amazing book. I think it's one of the best books written since basically Functional Fire Company. Seriously, for the fire service. It's that powerful. Scrolling. Damn phrase, water boils from the bottom. So goes the culture. Water boils where the heat's applied. That's one of my big ones I always like to throw back. Bust a move from Watson Kohanke. Preach. Be the change we want to see. Awesome stuff. We're getting a lot of good feedback. One person at a time. Robbie Townsend chiming. Dude, we got some solid people. Shane Bentley chiming in. You and one dude can change the culture of what's to come. One lone dancer. That's from Shane Bentley. Garrett. Oh, I scrolled too far. I'm sorry, guys. Garrett Rose said, top things to hit on for search class for new hires. There we go. Question. Top things to hit on for search class for new hires. Go.
So I'm going to, like, my boy Duffy, like, searchable versus survivable. I don't give a crap about survivable. That search profile, looking for searchable space, and then search technique, like, probably the two most important things. Understanding why it is that we're searching, where we're searching. Close to the fire, our primary targets, you know, based on statistical data, where we're most likely to find our victims, and then knowing how to get there to them and how to drag them out. So, how to decide where it is that we're searching, good search technique, drags, carries, victim removal, all that good stuff.
Love it. Pulling up my notes, I'm going to say, I want to talk about training, and I want to know what you think currently, it's completely your opinion. What do you think the fire service gets right, and what do you think we're getting completely wrong when it comes to training?
Man, so
and I know wrong, it's local, but
it is local, but sure. I'll tell you what, wrong on a large scale is our the books that we're teaching out of a lot of times. Those are kind of a beatdown, man. I think there's a video of me making fun of I think it was an IFSTA search video. I kind of did my own yodeling voice from the some game show. Like this guy, like basically just skipped this whole part of this room. But Noe Lopez last year, I believe it was like the Jones and Bartlett book. I wish I could quote what it was, but sure, found some kind of discrepancy in the book, and the data was just totally inaccurate. And then Jones and Bartlett actually reached out to him in the aftermath of that, said, "Hey, man, we'd like to make this better." I think he put him in contact with like Justin McWilliams or something like that. So
nice.
Stuff that we're getting wrong is, you know, just some of these publications, man. I've got to put together a list of like hitmen to put together some kind of like our own, like a new manual, man. Like with Brian Brush and Justin McWilliams and Nick Ledeen and you know, all these guys put together a new book. That'd be awesome. I'd buy the crap out of that book. Stuff that we're getting right is, I think the mission of the fire service coming back into prevalence. You know, we kind of went into this whole safety first thing for a long time, man. And I believe that that we're taking the fire service back and bringing the culture of the fire service to that. It's mission first, not us first. Putting them before us. That's what we're getting right now.
Dude, I love it. Getting value out of drills. Best way to make this happen, in your opinion?
Getting value out of drills. Make a pertinent that whole understanding why. Why are we doing this drill? How is this pertinent to this? How is it going to make me better? Running that drill cold. Hey, you have very little training on it. We haven't had any instruction. Hey, we're just going to throw this drill at you. Get after it. Analyzing those failure points, why these failure points are going to hang us up and how it's going to screw us up in the future. Remediation, and then running that drill again so you can see the value in whatever training you're doing. Understand why this drill is not just a drill. Hey, this drill is – we're going to run this drill on a fire because this is real life. Masking up and forcing a door, running a search drill, finding the victim, running a RIT drill, packaging a down firefighter. Why is this important? Being able to relate those drills back to real life problems, real people that have been injured or lost their lives, you know, that there's consequences to failure in real life. And we run these drills to, you know, improve these skills so that if we have the scenario again, it's not going to go wrong.
Love that, man. That relevance, man. Just making them understand the relevance.
Making everything relevant.
Dude, that is strong. And which leads to my next question, which is challenges of realism and relevance. The challenges, like live fire especially. Like you can do a lot of stuff with a lot of things, but live fire, it's hard to train.
So it's really hard to train, man.
It can be extremely difficult. What's your advice for overcoming that challenge? I mean, honestly, I mean, do you have anything?
Man, I don't know, man. Like, there's guys way better skilled at this than me. David Pruitt does a lot of acquired structure burns here in Texas. I think he kind of does them all over the place. I don't know. I saw him comment a little while ago. He's on here. Dave, jump in here. Trying to get, you know, acquired structures to do live burns. Trying, you know, the build outs, you know, there's a lot of, you know, the NFPA 1403, we can only have this burn package, you know, a safe burn package. We can't have combustibles inside the building with us. We can't have this, we can't do that, man. And you have to make the training as real as possible. Mm-hmm. You know, NFPA 1403 was designed to keep everybody safe. I understand that. But at some point in time, we can't train in a consequence-free environment all the time. That's one of the things I love about you know, the smoke diver program again, is like, you know, you're going to do some live burn evolutions that are, you know, it's going to get warm, like super, super warm, very uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Like, and we're going to get you comfortable being uncomfortable. But it's, you know, it's well choreographed and very well supervised and as safe as we could possibly make it.
And you find out what you can take.
Oh yeah. You definitely find out what you can take. You know, hey, is there really coming? I'm on fire, Ricky Bobby. Shaking his hands up. Yeah, this, I'll tell you the story later. It was great. Trying to just, you have to build that realism in there somehow. If you can't do live fire, you know, trying to do at least a smoke barrel. You know, we'll do all these drills. There's no consequence to failure.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of a problem. You have to, if you're running this, you know, SCBA maze, and hey, this guy runs out of air every time we go in here, or this guy rips his mask off every time that he gets entangled, or this guy, you know, if this happens in real life, what are the consequences to failure here?
Yes.
And trying to make that relevant to that guy. So I tell a story on myself. We're doing an SCBA confidence drill. I'm teaching the class, so we've got MSA packs. You know, the bottles on the MSA don't positively lock like the Scots do. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I just, hey, class is coming, I got to get through this maze real quick. So I spin my bottle, just, you know, I do the asshole spin where I don't open it all the way up.
Right.
Okay. Going through the entanglement prop. You know, when you turn an MSA on, you have the bell that comes on. Well, if you suck it to your face really fast, the bell makes that same noise. It whing, and then it sucks to your face. So I'm going through this thing. I hear the bell, and I assume that it was somebody turning their pack off. And then 2 seconds later, my mask sucks to my face. I go through my emergency procedures, spin my bottle on, I move on with the drill. And that was just muscle memory from doing that emergency procedure. You go, you know, bypass, go down to my bottle, spin it on. It was probably 10 minutes later, somebody going through the drill, as they're rolling through that entanglement prop, it spins their bottle closed, and you hear the bell, mask sucks to their face, and their immediate response was to rip that mask off.
Rip the mask off. Oof.
Yes. So if we did, that had been a, you know, a live fire scenario, we would have heard somebody there. Mm-hmm. So there's a balance between making this safe for everybody and then making it relevant.
No, there's no doubt about it, man. It's the challenge we all face.
Yeah.
And the biggest thing I'll say about it is you can look at it as an excuse to not do anything, or you can look at it as a challenge that has to be overcome. And it really comes down to mindset.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
And your mindset has to be this is an impossible thing we're faced, and we're going to overcome it, or we're going to do the best we can. So, but it's mindset, 1,000%.
Yes.
Seeing if I missed any questions. All right. Solid, solid. Pulling my notes up here because I want to throw a couple more at you. Lessons you have learned from instructing, advice you would pass on to others who want to train or instruct.
Lessons learned. I mean, I'm still learning them. Like I again, I screw up often. a lot. I think we've noticed a pattern,
a trend
here, that a trend of failure.
I noticed a trend of humility, man.
I'm glad you see humility.
I really do love it.
But man, it's trying to find a place to connect with them, especially new, like in the recruit school. Well, I mean, recruit school or even, you know, oh gosh, even at a conference or whatever. It's finding a way to connect to people, man. A lot of people, they come to conferences or they go to see these instructors, you know, big name guys, and those guys are sometimes they're unapproachable or they just talk down. And I never want to be that guy, man. I'm just a dude. Like, that's all I ever want to be. Like, I'm Eddie Steele. I'm the guy who does the thing. That's all I'm probably ever going to be, is the guy who does the thing. And then, That's probably the biggest thing, man. If you want to teach, is be able to relate to whoever it is that whoever your audience is. So if it's a group of candidates, relate yourself back to that candidate. Think about what you thought of as a candidate, how you responded to different instructors. If you're teaching, you know, guys that have been in the fire service a while, be able to relate to that guy, man. Because whether they're a new candidate or they're an experienced, you know, a seasoned guy, you can't fake this shit, man. They will eat you alive. They know when you're fake, bro. They will smoke you.
Man,
we had a guy come to the college that was, you know, he had taught at another program, and he came over, and he just wasn't it, man. And dude, they ate him. They ate him alive. And you know, I tried to help the guy out, man, but then I'm like, all right, man, you won't listen to me. I'll just let them eat you. I'm sorry, man. That sucks for you. Oh, dude, they got them. But same thing on that adult learning side, man. Have some experience, man. Like, I haven't burnt the world down in all the departments that I've worked at. I've been around a while, but I've been exposed to some great guys. You know, I've got a little bit of experience under my belt. Like, I still, man, and I don't know it all. That's another thing, man. Don't come at people like you've got all the answers, man. Don't be that guy, dude. I do not have all the answers, but I could find a guy who can help you out, man. That's sometimes the best I can do. And be humble, man. I realize that there are guys I learn. Well, probably one of the best things you'll do in your career and for yourself is to become like a Fire Academy instructor, because it forces you all that. You have to understand, you've got to have a good grasp of whatever that, you know, that subject is that you're teaching. And then just being humble, man. I learn stuff every time I go to a conference. I learn stuff from either other instructors. And I learn stuff from students, man. I take stuff away from everybody I meet at some point in time, man. And just coming at it from a point of, you know, you're here to help this dude along in his journey in the fire service. And don't be afraid. I'll ask students questions. Hey man, where did that come from? That's awesome.
Right on.
That's
right on.
You know, and be adaptable, and not afraid to don't check your ego, man.
Dude, and again, this is the, like, I don't know how many times I can say. If you got nothing else than that, just like, don't know it all and check your ego. Boom. Amanda Miller wants to know, in order to simulate real world consequences for mask removal or to increase stress response and improve performance under stress, have you ever conducted or considered conducting training with SCBA in a gas chamber type scenario, such as the Marine Corps does with the CS training?
So we do a drill. I haven't done CS training as far as that goes. I did that in the Army. Super fun time. so we do a drill in Georgia. Yeah, there's consequences for failure. You may get a little bit of smoke if you don't get it right. But again, it's very close to supervisors, an instructor on top of you. We're not going to let anything happen to anybody. But that's a great idea. The CS gas program. Sign me up. Let's go.
The consequence is real, man. I mean,
the consequences are super real. That's snot down to your ankles, and I'm all about that. Let's get it.
I like it. Watson Kohanke, forgive me, but that's what it looks like.
Watson Kohanke.
Kohanke. Okay. I was close. Yeah. I'll give myself.
You're there. You were there.
A minus. You've talked about smoke divers. Any comments about being involved in Fools chapters? Now I'm gonna lead it off by saying I'm a dues paying Fools member, and I think the Fools is one of the greatest things I've ever been involved with. And I don't care what chapter I've met. They're all amazing, and you should be involved in your local Fools chapter, and then go.
Yeah, that's how I kind of got started teaching was with the Fools chapter, man. And I wish that I had found the Fools earlier in my career. You know, I might be a chief right now had I joined the Fools earlier in my career and not reset, man. A bunch of great dudes, again, super humble guys. So I'm the training trustee for our chapter. I'm doing a terrible job. I've lined up some good lectures to come in and talk. You know, we got to get some hands-on stuff going here pretty quick. But we've done some great training with our Fools chapter, and that's honestly how I kind of got started teaching. After, you know, as far as the seasoned guy, you know, seasoned firefighter training was with them after I went to work for the college.
Love it.
Just a great bunch of dudes.
Love it. And I love the Fools. If anybody knows me, knows I love the Fools. And so I want to ask, book or books that you think firefighters should be reading?
Man, so I knew this was coming, and you'd think I'd be better prepared for it, but I'm not. Yeah, I know everybody said Extreme Ownership. I've read it multiple times. You and I have talked about this. Mm-hmm. Call Sign Chaos.
Love that
Jim
book.
Mattis book. Yes. Oh, dude, the first two sessions, especially when it goes from, you know, small unit leadership and then, you know, larger unit leadership. Excellent book. For the fire service, Norman, dude. I'm reading that for a promotional process right now.
It's about Handbook of Tactics or?
Handbook of Tactics, yes. Like, dude, read that book. Yes. This is my second time to read it. It's literally what we do. Like, almost verbatim, every page. It's what we do in the fire service. That could be the replacement for the IFSTA manual is John Norman Handbook of Tactics all day long. Yeah, man, those are probably.
I can't argue, man. I got two copies. I got 4th edition and 5th edition of Handbook of Tactics. And every time someone promotes and comes on my shift, I'm like, they get the one that I haven't given out. Yeah. The one that I just got back. I'm like, read this.
Yeah, like. So I started reading it back in January to study for a captaincy test that we don't have a date for yet. And I just finished it. Again, I didn't read diligently the entire time, but it's, dude, just so much great information.
Yeah, absolutely. Just the first chapter, man, will make you a better fire officer tomorrow.
Absolutely.
Period.
Like, absolutely.
So Jay Hurley said you're his 17th favorite Texan.
So Jay Hurley is a fire chief, and he was the class leader of my first smoke diver class, man, and just like one of the best dudes I know.
I got a goody boy here that just had surgery today, so he's hanging out. He's hanging out for the scrap, so I'm trying to
make sure. Buddy.
Yeah. All right. So we're moving on to a little thing we have here that's called the 5 questions for firefighters. 100% the answers are your opinion. There is no right or wrong. The points are completely arbitrary and assigned by me. So,
all right.
My question is, Justin with a Y phrase, are you ready for the 5 questions for firefighters?
Send it.
All right, here we go. Number one of the 5 questions for firefighters. And truthfully, these are going away in the next few episodes of the scrap because we're getting the next 5 questions. They're coming because after 100 episodes, we're going to do the next 5 questions. Just trying to figure out what they're going to be. He's struggling back there. What is the number one issue facing the modern fire service?
Man. So I've listened to so many scraps and so many answers to this, and there's a lot of them, but the mentorship, for sure. Just bringing new guys on and having solid mentors for these new guys. Raising the new guys, man. They are the future of the fire service. I have the guys on my crew. You know, they've been around a little while, but they're in their tenure in the fire service versus me at that same amount of time. They're better than me in
no
every
doubt.
Way.
No doubt, it's crazy.
They're so much better than me, and I I still push them and I still challenge them because they're going to be infinitely better than me. I want them, you know, I don't want them just to have the knowledge, man. I want them to have the mental toughness. I want them to have the grit. I want them to have that drive. And those guys are going to take the fire service from me and they're going to push it even farther, man. So bringing up these new guys in the fire service and mentorship.
Love it, man. Love the answer. Hold on 1 second. I'm going to let this guy out. Give me 1 second. Sorry to interrupt you.
Oh, you're fine.
He definitely needed to go. So, number two. Getting back to my questions. What is the thing you are most excited about for the future of firefighting?
The return of the mission, man. The refocusing on the nice. Mission, man. Like I came into the fire service, in 99, 2000 with, the Save Our Own, which again, I'm not going to tell you anything. All of that is amazing stuff. Being able to save firemen, one of the most important things that we can know how to do. But then there seemed to be this focus on us, this focus on firefighter safety, and that we're the priority. And we lost sight of the mission, I think, a little bit. And us taking back the fire service, man, the reprioritizing the mission, the reason that we're here, like our citizens are the reason that we're here. The customer is the reason that we're here. And that return to that's what I'm the most excited about.
Dude, that's a great answer. Great answer. I'll give you max points all day, every day on that answer. Number three, best rank or position to be in the fire service.
So again, I've listened to enough scraps to know what the right answer is.
According to me, I give out the points.
According to you.
The answer is according to you. So
according to me, I'm going to cheat. No, I'm not going to cheat. All right. Wherever you're at, people listening, wherever you're at, that's the best job you have. No. So driving the squad, I love driving the squad, for a couple of reasons. I get to be the buffer between that officer and the firefighter. I love driving. I'm still one of the guys, but I'm not in that officer hallway. You know what I'm saying?
No, absolutely.
Then when the officer's off, then, I step up. So I kind of get to live in both worlds right now. Again, I'm super blessed to be where I'm at. But here I am. I'm testing for that company officer's position because I believe that you have the most influence in that house in that company officer position. I can push influence up, but it's way easier to push influence down.
Absolutely.
So I'm probably going to get negative points because I'm going to waffle around on both of this and not give you a definite answer. The driver is a great position. I love that spot, but the company officer, again, that's where I want to be ultimately. And for that reason that I can, affect the culture in that house best from that position.
So the final answer was?
Final answer would be company officer.
This is my who wants to be a millionaire? Like final answer.
Yeah, final answer.
No, 100%. That's
all of them. Every job.
No. Max points is company officer. It depends on what you said, but there we go. No, 100%, man. And I get completely what you're coming from. I was just talking to a ride out lieutenant who was writing out. Lieutenants are our drivers that ride out as captains, which is our company officer. So, and he was dealing with, he rode out at another station. It was not his normal station. And he was dealing with a disciplinary issue there, and it wasn't his disciplinary issue. But it was just the whole dichotomy and the whole dealing with everything that anyway, it was.
But I tell you what though, man, there's a lot to be said for just the dude who does the thing. My brother Eddie, man, I just want to be the guy that does the thing, man. The guy that does the thing is a pretty sweet gig, man.
Making it happen does not hurt.
Yeah.
And you need it. That's the other part. It's not.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the thing I really want to say. There's nothing that's unimportant.
No, it's all important.
Yes, everything, man. It's a well-oiled machine, but company officer, 100%. Glad you agree. All right, number four. Best advice you have ever received?
Man, so I actually wrote it down.
Good.
Because I knew, because there's two things. So Chief Thompson tells a story about him going to New York, you know, when he was just like riding around. He met with Pete Lund, Rescue 4. And Chief Thompson's asking, hey, man, I don't know what I'm doing here. And this guy tells him, you have every opportunity to be a firefighter at the highest level. And, you know, Chief Thompson was in Plano, Texas at the time. As I do here in New York, you know, city, it's just going to look a little different. So you don't have to work in a big ass city to be the best firefighter that you can be.
Hell yes.
You can do that wherever you're at, man. Put in the work. You have Robert Ramirez on here, man. There's levels of this shit, you know, varsity or JV, man, it's up to you what you want to be. I don't give a shit if you're working in, you know, in New York City, Houston, Texas, or you're working, you know, at a small department somewhere, man. You can be as good as you want to be, man. It's out there for you to get. It's all just put in the work and do it, man. Mm. The second one, man, he was a driver in the colony. He's retired now. His name is Joe Clowers. And his was, if you're always trying to do the right thing, you'll never be wrong. Mm. So if you're always trying to do the right thing, you'll never be wrong. Have purpose in what you're doing, man. Like, don't get me wrong. You're going to get in trouble sometimes for doing the right thing. Sometimes you're going to be unpopular for doing the right thing, but the right thing is the right thing all the damn time. So always be trying to do the right thing.
Dude, that's solid. That's solid. No, the right thing's solid. And then you quoted Thompson, and you quoted Ramirez. And you, yeah, so 1,000%, dude. Crush that answer. Max points. And final question. I'm trying to figure out what you're going to answer before I do this, but I think I know. So we'll go.
Oh, you know. You know the answer.
Heavy fire and searchable space. Would you rather be assigned to the nozzle or first in on VES?
Where am I going? You know the answer.
Oh, you're going in the window. But,
I'm going in the window. Yeah. I may not even break the window out. I may just run through
just
it. I might
run through.
I don't even know.
You convert it as you run through. It's already a door.
Yeah. Now I'm going to pull the victim out. Then I'm going to run down the hallway. I'm going to take everything that's on fire. I'm going to throw it out the front yard. So the
complete salvage and overhaul is already completed.
Yeah, just, hey, the fire's in the front yard now, bro. You got it.
You got this handled?
Yes. No, man. That's just where I want to be and what I want to do, man.
No, 1,000%, man. And I love that. And that's why I don't know how I'm going to replace that question on the next five questions for firefighters. So I love that question and the people's answers to it so much.
Don't replace it, man. Maybe make it six questions. Or that
maybe that
still
one will just stay. Maybe that one will just stay as number five. Maybe that may be the answer to it. Dude, absolutely. There it is. The five questions for firefighters, according to Justin Fraze. We have the cuddly bear attack, said Devin Craig. That's a new IFSTA term. All right. Where was I? Let me pull up my notes because that's officially 115 scraps in the books. Brother, I had a blast so far. I hope you had a blast.
Dude, I had a great time, man. Thank you so much.
Let people know how they can reach out to you. Best way to get a hold of you if they want to ask you questions or say, how do I be a cuddly teddy bear who loves Rockstar energy drinks?
So you can get me on Facebook Messenger. You can email me, jfraze at jbiscuit, jbiscit at gmail.com or jfraze at the colonytx.gov.
I'll pull it up if I need to.
I was trying to remember my email address. Okay. I couldn't remember.
The city one's always the tough one.
Yeah, city one's always a tough
right
one.
Right on.
Don't send me anything inappropriate to that email. Please.
That was a direct request. All right, let me see if I missed anything. I want to throw anything else at you. Let me see. The cuddly bear. I already got the cuddly bear attack in. I felt bad good about that one. There's a lot of good stuff, man. New question for the scrap and for Fraze. Do you learn more from good past leaders or bad past leaders? That's solid, man. Hey, Westbrook.
Oh, please, that's a great question.
Please send me that so that I'll write it down in my little spreadsheet for the future questions. Because I only got like four scraps left before I got to have the 2022 is going to be the new questions. There we go, guys. Justin Fraze absolutely crushed it. I'm going to throw some housekeeping at you, which is firehousevigilance.com. The coins are back. Dutycoin.com, absolutely crushed it. The coins are back in stock. So if you want to get one of the Mutts Don't Scrap / Firehouse Vigilance coins, they were out of stock last week, and then they were actually in stock super fast. So that's really cool. They ran out and they're back in. They got in yesterday, in fact. Coming up, December 7th, Raymond, Big Black, Doraval. If you thought you got motivation tonight, just wait for a week. This is like motivation December.
Oh, dude.
Yeah.
No, like, I'm going to be fired up, dog.
Top that off, the 14th, 1 week later, Chris Kessinger, Citizens First, fire training. I don't think it gets better than that. And so.
No, man, that's, hey, so shout out to Kessinger, man. He was that was the first, like, out-of-state teaching gig I got was Chris. Nice. Chris brought me up there. That's where I met Duffy, met Bentley there. And, man, I really owe a lot to him for kind of getting me out there, man. So,
dude, those mavens, those connectors that just make stuff.
Oh, dude, it's so cool. I mean, it was love at first sight as soon as we got there, man.
I love it, dude.
It was glorious.
And then after that, after Kessinger, I've got the Mega Scrap, which is December 20th. Not my idea. Okay, I would love to take credit for it. It is 100%. Jim McCormack, FDTN, he reached out and said, I want to do a big scrap on Mayday and Ritt. And so he said, I want me, Rob Ramirez, and Basil Ibrahim. I keep saying it wrong. I'm sorry, Basil. And so it's going to be those three guys doing nothing but topping on the subject of Mayday and Ritt for the entire scrap. Never done it before. If it goes over good, we will do future scraps called Mega Scraps that are based on a topic with subject matter experts. So I'm really excited to see how that works out on December 20th. And then Dennis Laguerre is going to finish out the holiday season with the Christmas scrap. And we're going to completely nerd out on water stuff. So it's hard to know. There is no doubt about it, man. Every time he talks, I feel dumber. So there it is, man. Let me see if anything I missed. If you see me at a conference, I'm going to be up there for the benefit for Malachi Brown in Kansas, speaking there. If you see me, get pictures with me, man. I'm the world's worst at asking to get pictures, but I love to have them. So please ask me. If you think the scrap brings value to your firefighter life, the firefighter service, please go to firehousevigilance.com and support it. Rob Fisher, Josh Brooks, Kevin Cowan, thank you this week. You guys were big supporters of the show. I really do appreciate you. Thank you this week, Justin Fraze, coming on and giving me your evening.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, man. It was awesome.
And hey, mutts don't scrap. I hope the tone stays silent unless it's burning. Stay safe out there.
Thanks for listening to the Weekly Scrap. Please subscribe and please share. We'll see you at the next episode.